What is good, everybody? Ain't Hard to Tell podcast, episode 222, coming to you live. We're doing that. Twos across the board.
222, like, who did that shit? Was that Rick Ross? Yeah, he had a whole thing about 222s. I think that was in Hustlin, actually.
Or 22 twos, Jay-Z.
Yeah. I went to Rick Ross first. I don't know why.
I don't know why you did that, but okay. that is fine. How you doing, Brian? Dex, every Brian Fonseca here. How y'all doing?
Doing quite all right. You know, just game one of the playoffs yesterday for the Heat, Sixers, and the Mavs and the Suns, which I watched the whole thing of, both of them. And I'm a little tired because I didn't want to stay up that late. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some good games last night for the most part.
There were some good games last night. I got to watch pretty much all of the second game, half of the first game. But, look, man, out in these streets, tell people about out in these streets. Out in these streets, man, you got to try to avoid these rats out here. Rats is not playing right now.
Oh my god! Dexter has a rat story, and
Okay, so let the people know this.
I haven't heard this, so I can't let them know
that. This for people who know, Brian and I have talked about this body of work we worked on a while ago. La Cultura. The last day we filmed something for La Cultura. It's a true story. Last day we filmed something. After the Puerto Rican Day Parade,
mm-hmm.
Brian and I, we go back. We're going to go back to Brooklyn. We're going to go work on this thing. And we are at Grand Central. I think we're at Grand Central, right? We're at Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
Brian and I are there.
Shout out to
And we're standing there, and there's a young lady standing near us, and this rat just comes on the platform at us. I jump. It goes under me. Goes past Brian. Crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Jumped over your foot.
What'd you say?
It jumped over your foot. No, yes. My foot. One of
over
us.
Your foot. I jumped and it went under. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, now, to some degree, you're like, that's some New York shit, right? Like, yeah, it's some New York shit.
Unfortunately.
And on the subway platform, you kind of are not that crazy when you see this underground, but broad daylight.
Yeah. Yo,
these rats. We're still in a pandemic, but I think we're seeing some of the effects of the pandemic. Where I live in Brooklyn, in central Brooklyn, you don't really see rats. In fact, you don't. Except I've seen a few recently because we're not near the water. There are no underground train stations. It's all elevated, so you don't really see rats. But about a couple weeks ago, I was walking past this place a couple blocks from my house. On the way to the train station, and one morning I was walking there, and there was a rat just laid out, dead. Just laid out, on his back, laid out, right? Thought nothing of it, right near this garage. But the other day, I'm on my way to work, early in the morning. It's about, you know, it's about 7:30, somewhere between 7:30 and 8, about to head into SNY. I'm walking past the same exact spot. And there's a garage next to a house there. And I'm looking at my phone because I was switching a song on a playlist. And I'm looking at my phone and I'm looking down, folks. And what do I see? Oh, yeah. Here we go. My man, Jamal Murphy, he's watching on LinkedIn. He said, they're coming. Oh, they're coming. My man, Jamal Murphy, watching. I'm looking down. I'm on the phone. And I see large brown thing just run out right in front of my feet. Stops. I freeze, kind of jump up and back. When I land, it moves and it hits the back of my shoe.
No!
No!
It hits the
back of my shoe.
And no! You know,
and here's what I can describe it as, folks. And then bounced off the shoe, ran under a car across the street. Do you know what it felt like? You ever, for people who play baseball, you ever play baseball and like you boot the ball and mm-hmm. it might have hit your foot? Or somebody rolled the ball to you and it hit the back of your foot? That's what it felt like when that rat bounced off of my shoe. Like, what? And I should also add, previous couple days right before that, I was sitting in my car. I was actually on the phone with our homie Gerard Hector. and I was moving my car to another spot, and there's another building across from me, and I saw in the little courtyard a rat just moseying along in the middle of the day. What's going on, New York City? What's going on? They out here in the middle of the day acting like they don't give a damn.
It's my least favorite thing about New York City, and we need to get rid of all of them.
I'm here for that.
This is a more pressing matter than, I don't know. I don't want to say anything flagrant, because there are actually more pressing matters, which we've, you know, learned about today. But look, it's the worst thing about New York City, a city that I love and never want to leave. I don't want to deal with this shit. I hate them. I want to assassinate all of them. And this needs to stop happening. And I was especially triggered as a former second baseman, growing up playing baseball.
You knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, I was primarily a second baseman. I also played a little bit of shortstop and very little bit of outfield. I don't know why the fuck they put me in the outfield when I was 7 years old, but hey, made the All-Star game anyway. Look, no. I just don't miss that feeling of anything hitting my cleat, and I do not, like, no, man. No, I just, this is, see, rats are the reason why, when I move later this year, we'll get into that another time, don't want to go to Long Island City. I just don't anymore. Yo, wanted to at some point, but nah, man.
Yo, but here's the thing. Let me, for people who might not understand what Brian's saying, Brian's talking specifically about neighborhood in North Queens, and it's a lot of waterfront neighborhoods in New York City, whether it's Long Island City, whether it's Williamsburg, even beautiful neighborhood in Brooklyn Heights. You're going to see some rats when you're close to the water.
Yeah.
So
we used to work at St. Francis, Brooklyn, in Brooklyn Heights.
Yep.
And you would see some occasionally, and we would get out late often because of work or whatever.
And they'd be
out there at the Chipotle, block away,
Montague Street.
You know why? Because there's a train station right there. Two, there's trash on the street all the time.
And it's heavy.
In front of the Chipotle.
And it's a heavily trafficked area. I remember one night I was walking with another former coworker when we worked there, and we were coming back from another spot, and we hit on there, and our man Murph says they're deep in Bed-Stuy. Yeah, we seen them out in the sky sometimes, which is a little shocking because it's Central Brooklyn, but a lot of underground train stations there. But I was coming back with this coworker.
They be in parts of Bushwick and even Ridgewood, unfortunately. So that doesn't surprise me.
We were walking back and we hit the corner right off the court. Bam, right onto Montague. Hit that corner. I swear, like six rats just ran out from a car. Speaking of our man Murph, you remember last year when we was hanging out and we went to the wine bar and we were on the Upper East Side. Remember we was walking home? Murph remembers, man. They were out there. They were out there, man. Like those.
That's why I don't know why Gerard had those thong sandals on. I don't understand that shit.
Wait, what'd you say?
That's why I don't understand why Gerard had them thong sandals on.
Oh, you're talking. I don't remember if it was that day or the time we went by the spot near Gerard's place. I don't remember what he was wearing.
Whatever it was. Like, yo, if I know there's rats in the area, I'm not wearing flip. You ain't seeing my feet. Fuck that. All right. I don't even like wearing sandals at the beach. I'm that dude, but whatever. It's another story for another day.
Oh man. Yo, the rat problem is whatever. You know what? And this is a good point, but Murph is right about this here. Here's why Murph is right. So the buildings around my way, they all including my building.
Read the comment for the people.
Tell all these dummies putting flowers and bushes in front of y'all to chill. You're just creating safe havens. And the shit ain't even pretty. Now, remember the building I was telling you where I saw the rat just meandering along in the middle of the day? Yeah, it was all among the flowers and everything, and probably was burrowing up in there. Man, New York City rat, man, it's serious business. Serious, serious business. But that is my tale. I survived. Thankfully, the rat didn't run up my leg. Nothing like that happened. But they out here, man. They out here. They're not playing and not afraid. Middle of the day, they just coming out. They might be coming for you. Who knows? All right, we'll get to some sports and hip hop stuff here. NBA second round start of the NBA conference semis are underway. All these games have now played at least one game. Brian talked to you about that last night. He saw his Miami Heat get a win, which means that he came back and is in a good mood today, because had they not, he would have been miserable. And the Suns get a win over the Dallas Mavericks. On Sunday, we saw the two road teams win. So the two home teams won last night, but Sunday, the two road teams won. That with the Bucks beating the Celtics and the Warriors beating the Grizzlies. So really interesting stuff going on here. Should we start with your Heat? What do you take from your Heat? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's get out the way. Let's start it first.
Yeah, with your pink Miami shirt that you got on today, like you said, just moved down to South Beach.
Vice jerseys were fire. I don't know why they stopped doing it. There's only so many different combinations you could do, I guess. But it is what it is.
Yeah, or you could just keep them as your alternate jersey forever. That would be good. Some things are that good. What do you take away from this Heat victory? Are you impressed? Not impressed? Slow first half, but they turn things on in the second.
Yeah, a lot of Heat fans, you know, freaking out after the second quarter. And I was like, look, this is part of the thing with this team. Sometimes you just have a bad quarter. It happens. Teams have bad quarters. You know, Phoenix wasn't great all 48 minutes last night, and Dallas kept it a little bit closer, nearly covered than people would have thought. Both teams covered, by the way. Should mention that. We talked about that. You know, during the NBA exchange, both teams did cover, the Heat and the Suns. Yeah, the game was good. They played three very good quarters, the first, third and fourth in particular. And this is kind of what we talked about yesterday on the exchange, Dex. It's like the idea that Philadelphia can just power on with a very small rotation and playing guys so many minutes, and against the Heat in particular, who tries to wear you down and usually does successfully, like, it's just not going to work. And Joel Embiid being there obviously would change some things, because he's an MVP candidate. But at the same time, it's like Miami can game plan for him too. And it's not necessarily fixing your depth issue that much. You wouldn't see DeAndre Jordan. You would see Joel Embiid. That's a big plus. Don't get me wrong. But aside from that, it's like they've been primarily leaning on four guys during the playoffs. Those being Joel Embiid, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, and Tobias Harris. And now without having Joel Embiid, it's three. And with having Joel Embiid, it's only four, which is the point. Danny Green is not really that reliable. Matisse Thybulle hasn't been that great in the playoffs. You know, you saw Korkmaz last night. You saw a lot of Paul Reed last night. And that's not really ideal for the Sixers in this series, I would say.
Not ideal for them at all whatsoever. At all whatsoever here. And here's the thing. I didn't watch a lot of the first half, but I guess people kind of got gassed thinking, okay, they're hanging in there. But I think you really saw their offensive limitations and struggles in the third quarter. James Harden couldn't get it done. Then they asked James Harden about PJ Tucker's defense on him and the defense on him in general. And he hit somebody. I think this was the first one of the playoffs. It was the first next question of the playoffs. I believe it was
He hit my boy Mateo Mayorga from Five Reasons Sports with that, who's been on the Bahama Rican Boys before. Mateo asked him the question. James Harden hit him with the next question. And I told Mateo, you should be very honored for that, because you pissed off James Harden, which is, you know, that's good for the resume. You know what I mean?
Actually feels like it's probably not that hard to do, but yes, it is. It can be good for the resume. The second game last night was the Suns and the Mavericks. Yeah, this game, you know, the Suns were in complete control throughout, but the Mavs did play tough towards the end. Almost had some people sweating with their lines there. They made it close. Luka Doncic was really impressive. Didn't shoot the ball that well from three. But he was cooking. He was cooking, right?
Yeah.
He was cooking. Helped me out on some props I had there. So thank you, Luka. He was cooking. He's a problem, but somebody else is going to have to step up. Brunson wasn't good last night. Dinwiddie was non-existent at all last night. Somebody else is going to have to step up from that. But I did like how they defended towards the end of the game. I do think there's something to that, and can that carry over into game two? We will see what's going on. But Phoenix, you know, good performance defensively for them for the most part. A little bit sloppy towards the end, but we'll see what they can do. Are you impressed with Dallas in any way coming out of this? Because I'm a little bit with how they fought. I don't know how that translates to game two, but I did think they showed a lot of fight and toughness. They never gave up in that game.
Yeah, and look, it's just their starting lineup sometimes, like, Dwight Powell could sometimes be like a weak spot, and yesterday wasn't very impactful. Reggie Bullock is somebody who I expected more from, and they even played him more than I expected, which is interesting. He did have a big bucket late. Luka Doncic was incredible, but like, you're going to need absolutely more than that. Spencer Dinwiddie, I didn't feel like was aggressive last night, which is uncharacteristic a little bit. It's just game one, and Phoenix is a very tough team. Like, they were taking a lot of this stuff away to their credit. But without Maxi Kleber's 5 3-pointers, it it just felt like Dallas was not really in that game, aside from like two like really above averages in terms of stats, in terms of what they average, literally. Luka Doncic and Maxi Kleber going crazy, like they're not even in that game. So there's some positives to take from that, though, because Spencer Dinwiddie didn't get it going. Dorian Finney-Smith, I thought, was pretty good, too. We should mention him, too. But Dwight Powell, Reggie Bullock, Spencer Dinwiddie didn't really get it going, and they still managed to keep it close. So I think there's positives to take away from that, but I would not want to lean on Luka Doncic so much and wear him down over the course of a playoff series against the Phoenix Suns, who can wear you down. And I've told you, like, high usage basketball in the playoffs doesn't usually translate if you're, you know, the rest of your team isn't picking it up. So
yeah, and that was one of my concerns looking at that. I still felt like, as much as, you know, everybody knows I love Doncic, there was still too much high usage with him, too much dribbling, waiting for something to happen, not much else. So somebody else, and I think it could be Brunson. You saw Brunson get going a little bit late. I think if Brunson's a little better, that'll help them. Dinwiddie, too, as you said, wasn't really aggressive.
Those are the main two for me.
We talked about this on the exchange yesterday, so we talked about the games on Sunday, so I won't go back into that. But tonight, both those teams play again. Do you see any of the home teams here, the Celtics and the Grizzlies, getting wins? Because I've been thinking about this and how I might want to do a little betting on this later today. I'm not really sure, man. I'm starting to buy into the Bucks. Maybe I'm getting a little bit of hype off the first game, but what do you think? Because I can see the Grizzlies winning tonight. I'm not sure about the Celtics. I don't know why. I'm not completely sure about the Celtics. Something's telling me to pause on that. Am I tripping on this, or what do you think?
I'm looking right now just to see what the lines are, because I would feel more comfortable taking the home teams to cover than to outright win, because and it's weird because they should both win. I don't think either series should be 2-0 going back to the team that's ahead, going back to their home floor. But it's tough because right now, and this is interesting actually, because I'm looking at FanDuel, the Celtics are -5 favorites. And that to me is pretty shocking, given what we just seen. And like, I know the Celtics are very good, don't get me wrong, making adjustments and things like that. Like, that should be something that, but they're -210 on the money line and just -5 favorites. Whereas the Warriors are actually favored to win in Memphis again, -2 favorites. And they didn't cover last time because it was a 1-point game. I actually could see the reverse where like Milwaukee wins again and that wouldn't shock me, and Golden State. I mean, Memphis wins, because I have
that's where I'm leaning to, man. I'm kind of leaning towards that. I can see that.
In terms of result, like now I'm like, because I was thinking before this, I thought Milwaukee would be the favorites, but I guess, you know, people just have enough respect for the Celtics to see that they're not going to go down, 2-0 on their home floor. But if I'm getting the Bucks at +5, I might have to take that. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm That's getting the I'm Bucks, saying. Like, sometimes you see this too. Like, you saw this in the Grizzlies series with the Timberwolves, totally different teams. But like, you see this sometimes where the road team will take game one, and then game two, like, the home team just blows them out. It gets back on their BS, or whatever, and then going back, it's 1-1, and then, you know, the series plays out from there. I could see that happening, but man, the Bucks at +5. That's interesting. And also +176 on the money line. Like, that's really something to think about. Because Bucks being up 2-0 even without Chris Middleton,
it's not crazy.
It's not crazy.
That's why I'm gonna have to really think about this one. That's a tough one. I think Memphis wins tonight, though. Like, I feel better about that. I think they win tonight. I don't think it's easy, but I think they win tonight. I feel better. But the Bucks are making me think. I wouldn't shock me if the Bucks were up 2-0. after tonight, it wouldn't shock me at all. But it's gonna be interesting.
If you did like a little, if you did like a little underdog parlay, right? If you like the way you're talking about it, if you did Bucks and Grizzlies, just straight money line, you can put down 10 and win about $50. That's where it's at right now. You know, like, so if you see, to me, I this is kind of more of a stay away, but like, if I'm looking at, because I just don't know, right? I have more conviction about game one, which I did nail. I got both winners, but this one, I just, you know, I could see the home team just sort of getting back to where they should, and the road team just sort of letting up a little.
Yeah, it's funny. It's
gonna, I might be just tough. Stick to player props tonight,
I'm thinking that too.
The Bucks and Grizzlies, though, if you put down even if you put down five, you're talking about $24 or so.
But see, I might stick to player props and do a little underdog parlay. That way, you know what I'm saying? If you lose it, you're not really that mad. You took a little swing there. If you win, you're a little happy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe get some player props in there. Okay. But listen, these conference semis should be fun. I think all these matchups are fun. Brian gave you some of his picks. I think Miami wins this, as Brian said. As he should in four. What do you say? Four or five? Did you say four or five or five or six?
I can't remember. Five or six.
He's a five or six.
No, it's not going to be four. Like, yeah. Miami will fuck around, and you know, Philly will. I mean, look, Philly still has top end talent, right? Like that can win you a game. It's just over.
Yeah, and I hope
series is tough. That's tough.
I hope Embiid comes back because you know you just want it to be more fun with Embiid. But I think Miami
with Embiid healthy, I was saying Heat in six.
Yeah, and I think, but I still think Miami takes advantage of these games without him, and like they did last night. I think they'll take care of business when they need to, and they did. They started off slow, but they got the job done.
And let's also remember, like they have a big loss too. Like Kyle Lowry not being there is significant. And if you've watched the Heat this year, like you would think, you know, or if you haven't watched them this year, rather, you would think that hey, he only averaged like you know roughly 13-8. That's not even like a great Kyle Lowry season. No, but if you watch the team, like. The reason why their late game offense has looked good at times is because Kyle Lowry's out there. Without him is where it really gets like messy because
I just wonder how they're going to play this for game two. Because I think they're playing it safe for Kyle Lowry, which I think is the right thing to do. I don't think they're going to rush him back. I wouldn't shock me if we don't see Kyle Lowry till the series switches to Philly. I think that's when you might see him. I wouldn't shock me if the Heat sat him out for game two to play it safe, which I think is the right move.
I think if the Heat drop game two, you see him in game three. I think if it's 2-0, you just keep him out until you absolutely need to put him in there. Like if it's two, like if Philly were to win 3 and 4 at home, I think we may see Lowry in game five. I think that's how they're going to play it. Or that's roughly what's been said, at least, you know, from some of my teammates at Five Reasons Sports.
All right. We'll see. NBA second round should be really fun. Moving along, we're going to talk some hip hop. Album that dropped, I believe, the week before last, Pusha T's It's Almost Dry. This was anticipated by a lot of people for quite some time, coming off of Daytona, which a lot of people liked a few years ago. I did like that project, very tight, very short. The anticipation behind this one, rather interesting because you had all the production on this being handled by Pharrell. And Kanye, two of my favorite producers, two top five producers on this. I'm intrigued to hear what Brian has to say about this album. Because I've sat with this album for a while. I probably listened to it about four or five times through. And I think it's solid. I think it's really good. I'll give my review right off the top of the bat. I'll give this about a 7.5 out of 10. I think it's a really good project. I think that when it comes to coke rap, the subject matter obviously can be pretty redundant and sometimes can get stale. There are songs that I really like on this album. I don't think this is like a great album by any means, but I think it's good. It's good to very good. There's some really strong highlights on this album that I like. And I will say this, I think the Pharrell production on this album grossly outshines the Kanye production. Some of the Pharrell production is fantastic. Sounds like classic Neptunes.
Yep.
Whether it was Brambleton, Let the Smoker Shine, The Coop, a standout for me.
Yep.
Call My Bluff, arguably my favorite song on the album, in which Pusha T channels in old school Mace flow.
We can go song by song. because I was about to do that.
We can pull that up. But yeah, for me, 7.5 out of 10 is a good. Brian, you're a little bit lower on this album than I am.
I like it. Don't get me wrong. Slightly lower. But like it to me, it's still one of the best albums that's come out this year so far. Now, that's in part because like what are the great albums that have come out this year so far? There haven't been many. This is a problem that we've seen the last couple of years where guys are just, you know, they just don't want to drop so early in the year, which I get. So we'll see how that sort of manifests itself throughout the rest of the year. But I have the track list in front of me. It's 12 songs. And which
I should also note, something I like about the album, if you know me, it is tight, especially for a Coke rap album, tight.
Yes.
I enjoy it. It's a very nice, quick listen.
12 songs, just a couple hairs under 36 minutes. So right in the sweet spot in terms of album length and things like that. Facts. We got a comment from Murph.
Yo, Murph. Hey, Murph.
Future's project is 22 songs. I just can't. I did hear one song that I like.
Hold on. Who said, since Murph came out, said that he's going to check it out, and he did hear Future's mid project, which is what I expected it to be. I'm probably not going to listen to that at all whatsoever. And I'm not listening in protest of that ridiculous, absolutely positively ridiculous GQ cover, which said that Future was the best rapper alive. Say who?
Who
said this? He's the best rapper from his own city of Atlanta. It's not that.
Maybe not even his own block, because I'm sure there's like another really good Atlanta rapper from down there.
Like, I try to hit a Future. I'm not even get that mad because like it's GQ. Like GQ did this. Like nobody. We're not going to GQ as the authority on hip hop. So
right. I don't even know who we're going to for the authority on hip hop these days. Maybe you can come here. But
ain't hard to tell podcast.
Right. So continue. We have Brambleton first song. This one right off the bat, I was like, oh, okay. Yep. Like this is fire. You know what I mean? And this is one of the beats that I really like that Pharrell produced on the album. Brambleton, great start. And you know I'm all about great intros, especially as somebody who's a Nas fan, and Nas doesn't miss on his intros. Let the Smoker Shine the Coops. You already mentioned that song.
No, that song is
very good. Yes.
If you play that in your whip,
yes,
you got it.
Absolutely. Very, very strong start. And then this is where it tailed off a little bit for me. Dreaming of the Past with Kanye West. I ain't going back to it.
So I have a thing about the song. I generally like the sample. I like the Donny Hathaway sample there. I like what's done. At first, when I listened to it, the sample seemed too loud for me. It like almost like it wasn't mixed properly. Kind of annoys me. It kind of annoyed me. It's grown on me a little bit. My other issue is Kanye then comes in for a verse, which is completely forgettable. We did not need that. That's a weird song for me because I kind of like it, but there's things about it I don't. But go ahead.
And for me, it was also that and just like, you mentioned this too, but the beat itself, I also didn't really love the execution of it, but maybe that's just a nitpicky thing. Neck and Wrist with Jay-Z and Pharrell. I'm probably not going back to this a ton, but I do like the song.
No, I like that. I like that song.
I like that song. I don't know how much I'm going back to it, but I do like the song. Just So You Remember is, I think, a very good beat, underrated, because I slept on it a little bit the first few times I heard it, and then I went back. I also listened to this straight through about 4 times or so. Or maybe 3, and then went back and listened to the songs that I actually liked. Diet Coke was a single that came out a while ago, 88 Keys. Apparently, this beat was made in like 2004, as 88 Keys, I think, revealed.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. And then when you hear it, it's like, oh, okay, it sounds kind of NBA Live 04 Dilated Peoples-ish. So I could hear that.
but I like it, though.
in a good way. Rock and Roll with Kanye West and Kid Cudi. This is the one where Kanye has the very emotional verse that people were talking about at the end that I didn't care for. So
I do not care for this song at all.
No,
I mean this is like an auto skip for me.
Like I know people are like, yo, like Kanye, he bared his whole soul, talked about Kim. Yeah, I don't give a fuck. Track 8, Call My Bluff. Call My Bluff is the one that you really like.
I love it. It's probably my favorite song on the album.
Call My Bluff is very good. I don't know how I feel about this song. I like Don Toliver's hooks, and I thought Uzi was fine, but I'm probably not going back to Scrape It Off very much. This is track 9.
I actually like this song. I don't love it, but I like it. I can see you're not going back to it a lot, but I liked it. I do like Don Toliver's hook on this song.
My problem in general with like the music we've been getting, this is not specific to this album.
Okay.
I've already said like, you know, there's songs that I'm going to check out. But my specific thing is like, I feel like, I don't know what it is. It's just a lot of songs like aren't really keeping me there. Like, it's like, I'm kind of probably going to listen to this the couple times I listen to this album and then keep it moving. You know what I mean? Like, I want more songs that are like, yo, I'm saving this and I'm going to come back to it a lot. I haven't got a lot of that this year outside of like Denzel Curry and Vince Staples projects, respectively. Those two. Those are my top two. So
we, you know what? We're going to have to go back and talk about the Vince Staples project, because I'll let people, we don't have time to do it today, but I will let people know.
I will let people know.
I really like that project.
I'm still listening.
Probably my favorite hip hop album this year. I really, really like that project. We'll dive into that another time. In the coming weeks. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then we have three more for the Pusha T album. Hear Me Clearly with Nego. I had to make sure I said that correctly because, you know,
can't stop that one. Don't be doing that.
You know, I like that song. It's all right. A lot of writing credits on this. Jesus. But I do like the song. I don't know how much I'm going back to it either. I like Open Air a good deal. And
I love that.
I wish there was another verse, kind of.
Yo,
very short, but Open Air is.
I agree with you. Very short song. Wish it was another verse. The flutes used by Pharrell on this beat is just, it's beautiful. It's so good.
It's one of the songs I really liked. And Hear Me Clearly, I like more. I like more than I just let on, but like, it's not one of my favorite songs in the album. Open Air is. Open Air absolutely is. Might be my favorite song in the album. And then I Pray For You featuring Labyrinth and No Malice, Pusha T's brother, which two thumbs up for me. Always glad to hear them collab again. I thought it was an appropriate ending to the album. I'm big on how you start and how you finish. I thought it was appropriate. I thought it was good. Favorite songs on this album, to put a bow on it, I would probably say Open Air is up there for sure. Still really like Diet Coke. And Brambleton, I guess. You know, those will probably be my top three.
Yeah, I think I gave my top three. Let Smoke Shine the Coop, Call My Bluff, Open Air. Those are my top three. I like Brian, do like I Pray For You. I think it's a really good song to close the album.
Yes.
I like the touch and the vocals from Labyrinth. For those people who watch Euphoria, you're very familiar with Labyrinth's music. It is throughout the show. He does a lot of the music stuff on there with Zendaya. So he's a really dope songwriter, really good sound. So that's good. What are you giving this album overall?
Probably 7 out of 10 for now. Which, look, I don't want people to get like, that's good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's
not I know people are giving it shit. Even Pitchfork gave it a 7.8 out of 10. But you know, maybe it'll get to 7.5. I could see that. But for me, it's just like there are great albums that I give an 8 out of 10. So I just don't want people to wild out. But 7 out of 10 is strong. I don't know how much I'm gonna like revisit it beyond this. There are a bunch of songs that I like, but the lows aren't incredibly low or anything like that. But they're just like there's just more here that I don't care for than I expected. I thought Daytona was tighter, though I wasn't even as high on that as some people were because there are people
neither was I.
People were calling it a classic and shit like that, and I was getting album of the year love or whatever. What year was this? 20 was it 18?
18 or 19. I can't remember. I think it's 2018.
I think it was 18 because 18. It was before
Nasir. It's 2018. It's 2018. 2018.
Yeah, 2018 because it was before Nasir. I don't remember what my album of the year was that. Oh, Book of Ryan, actually. Yeah, so it's like
yeah.
You know, but 7 out of 10.
I'm fine with that. I actually like this better than Daytona. In a way, Daytona's tighter, and Daytona had two really, 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 really good songs that Kanye produced. I like this better, and I think a lot of it is I like it better because I like the variety. I like when, you know, I forgot, there's another producer who worked on this album too. I said it was solely Kanye and Pharrell, and it wasn't. Bugs the Beast also did. He did Hear Me Clearly, the Nego joint, and also Just So You Remember. So want to give him his credit on there. Metacritic right now has an average score for this of 87 out of 100. Clash gave it an 8 out of 10. Hip Hop DX has it a 3.8 out of 5. Pitchfork, as Brian said, 7.8 out of 10. Rolling Stone gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, like, this, it's pretty
about right.
pretty good reviews. It's getting, you know, receiving critical acclaim according to Metacritic. I don't think it's quite as good as an 87 out of 10. But, you know, I think this is a good album from Push. I think Push knows what he's doing in his lane, and I like that he makes the albums tight. I don't think it's – I think maybe he understands the limitations or sort of redundancy that could come in coke rap, and he's trying to actually get delivered to you as best as he could, deliver you this product as tight and concise as he could. Moving along, because we got a couple of things to talk about real quick before we get out of here. You know what I'm excited for. Next Friday. Next Friday at midnight. Don't bother me. Don't call me. Don't text me. I ain't talking to nobody unless it's an emergency, right? Brian even knows, don't hit me until I'm done listening to this album. Kendrick will be back. New album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. No idea what that means. Don't really care.
It'll make sense when the album comes out.
I'm sure it'll make sense when the album comes out. Or it won't. It'll be terrible. But it's Kendrick, so I don't think that'll happen. I'm super pumped for this. We were waiting for a long time. We were waiting 5 years for some new K-Dot. It's coming. It's supposed to be his last album on TDE. We'll see what he does after this. Kendrick's supposed to be at a bunch of festivals this year. So we'll see. But I'm really excited for this. And I'm hoping that it's really good as all his other major studio releases. So we'll see. As people know, Brian and I, we like Damn, but we both were not as high on Damn as some other people were. I do not think it was as good as To Pimp a Butterfly or Good Kid, M.A.A.d City or even Section 80, first indie release album. I don't think it's as good as that, but it was good. But this, I'm really excited. I'm excited to see what Kendrick has to say, what he's going to talk about, what the concept of this album is. I'm actually hoping, I know people are going to think this is weird, but I hope within the next, what are we talking about, 10 days or so, I hope that we don't even get a single. I don't want a single. Just drop the album midnight, Friday. I'll be listening probably 2 or 3 times instead of going to sleep and dissecting and all that stuff. And that'll be it. Are you as hyped as I am, Brian? Probably not.
Probably not, but I am very hyped because I've been waiting for this for a while. I don't count the Black Panther soundtrack as a Kendrick project, though obviously he had his hands in that, and that's something that he did work on after Damn. But this is the first proper release we're getting in 5 years. And yeah, I like Damn very much. I just don't think it was as good as his top 3 albums, and I was surprised that all the Kendrick albums to win a Pulitzer, that was the one where I would argue he has 3 albums better than that. That's really my only critique on that. But in terms of this album, I can't wait. I'm excited. We're going to have a guest on the pod that I'm working on to come talk about that, who's a big Kendrick fan. And also, you know, we'll lend voice to his excitement for this project. And I think it's going to deliver in a big way. I'm excited because this is something we talked about during the early days of the pandemic, where there are certain artists that we need to hear from, talk about this. I was glad that Nas dropped and talked a little bit about this. And has talked about it otherwise on, you know, at different parts of King's Disease, though the themes were a little bit different. But we need certain artists to speak about these times. And I think Kendrick is going to lend voice to that, an important one, too.
Yeah, I'm just intrigued with everything with the sound. And yes, Brian and I are working on getting a guest, and we hope that episode will be very heavily focused on that. So, you know, hopefully we're able to do that. We think that'll be a fun one. Wow, somebody offers a question here, but I'll take it because it's different than our topic. Who do you think are the 5 best European players in the NBA in the last 5 years?
Wow. Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, in no particular order. Those two are the first two that I think about.
In the last 5 years, Luka Doncic, I agree. Jokic.
Am I going to have to say Rudy Gobert?
Probably. You probably are. Rudy. I guess then you're probably looking at like Bojan Bogdanovic.
Oh, Giannis, duh.
Giannis. Oh, sorry. Yes. How are we not going to say Giannis? Yes, obviously.
Rudy
Giannis,
Gobert is
Giannis before Rudy Gobert. There's no way that would
put Giannis one, Jokic two, Luka three. Luka three on any list is nuts. Gobert four, I guess. And then from there, I don't know. Can I slide Joel Embiid in there? Because I'm writing about this for Basketball News.
Well, he's not European, so slide him in there.
He wants to be. He wants to play for the French national team and is trying to make himself like a French citizen or whatever.
Why is he doing this? No.
I think it's because he probably wants to win a gold medal, and honestly, Cameroon is just not going to have that opportunity. It sucks because
colonizers. F the
colonizers. I agree. Look, it sucks because I actually think if Joel Embiid and Pascal Siakam, and if he's still playing, Luke Richard and Bahamute, were to play for Cameroon, yes, you could be one of the five best teams in the Africas and then qualify for the World Cup and potentially qualify for the Olympics after that. The World Cup is more important than the Olympics because more countries play, at least in my opinion. Basketball, they're trying to... Soccer, it's not even close. Basketball, they're trying to make the World Cup matter more, and I think that they're actually doing a decent job with that. So we'll see in 2023. But
I don't like that
Joel Embiid. Like, he's going to play for France, so it's going to be like him and Rudy Gobert are going to be the same starting lineup. And it's like, I don't know. This isn't like Hakeem Olajuwon playing for Team USA to me, because Hakeem, like, went to college here. And like, you know,
yeah, I look at that a little differently.
Yeah, like, so him
and it's a different time. And it was a different time, but yeah, no, I like that. I don't know who we're putting at five. Like I said, maybe now you're talking about Bojan Bogdanovic, maybe.
No, there has to be something else here. And I want to get to boxing, so I don't want to spend too much time.
Yeah, because we got to do that. And then I got to get out of here because I have to, unfortunately, I forgot to cook my daughter's lunch. With her school stuff today, so I got to go give it to her. I can't think of a fifth one. You think of a fifth one, we'll go, but we're going to move on quickly to boxing.
Okay, here we go. Final list for me. This is okay. Dennis Schroeder is definitely not in this top five. No. Nikola Vucevic, I would probably put Bojan ahead of him at this point.
I would, yep.
Evan Fournier.
I'd put Bojan ahead of him.
Yeah, I think it's Bogdan Bogdanovic, maybe, or Bojan. One of those two. Depending on how you feel about Domantas Sabonis, I think he's Lithuanian.
If it was talent, but he doesn't play enough, Porzingis has to be there, but he just hasn't been on the court enough.
I put Sabonis ahead. So Sabonis five. Can't believe we did this, but shout out to the commenter.
No, I appreciate the question from the commenter. We appreciate you.
Five is Domantas Sabonis. Four, Rudy Gobert. I could flip those two, but I'm not going to. Luka Doncic, three. Two, Nikola Jokic, and one, Giannis. There you go. Those are the five best European players in basketball right now. We got some damn good European players in the game right now.
Yeah, and there are a lot of good
more coming in this draft, by the way, but we could talk
about all five of the guys you just mentioned have all at least made an all-star team, and some are multiple all-stars. So, no doubt. Good question. Thank you. Thank you for the question. We appreciate that. That was a really good one. All right, we're going to move on to boxing real quick, and then we are going to wrap here. Boxing history at MSG. Woo! Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, first ever women's fight to headline a card and then sell out at MSG. Folks, it's a big thing that they were headlining the card. But then to not only headline the card and then sell out MSG, props to ladies. And here's what I think was even better. Now, I did not watch this, so I'm going to like really just lob this up to Brian. I did not watch this, but by all accounts, this was a dope-ass fight, and it was really close. It did not go the way of Brian's Puerto Rican sister, Amanda Serrano.
Should have.
I heard it was really close. Heard it could go the other way. Brian, I'm going to still rewatch this fight because I have not done it. But Brian, this was obviously a historic night at MSG, a historic night for women's boxing. What did you think about this? And what do you think? I think the bigger thing is I want you to talk about what you think about it, but also what you think it means for women's boxing going forward, right? Because we have these moments and events, but it's about, how is this pushing the sport forward, especially for the ladies on this side?
I did just write about this on Latino Rebels also. So Ring Magazine is actually in their 100th year of existing. They established themselves in 1922. And the reason why I bring that up is because they've given out awards for 100 years. So Fight of the Year being one of them. Women have never won Fight of the Year in Ring Magazine. I think this one has a chance to actually do it. Now, they're already talking about a rematch. They're already talking about making it 3-minute rounds instead of two. That's significant because for people who don't know, men's championship boxing, when you're fighting for a world title, it's 12 rounds, it's 3 minutes each. Women, it's 10 rounds, it's 2 minutes each. Obviously unfair, similar to how in tennis, women best 2 out of 3 sets, men best 3 out of 5. In the NBA, 12 minute quarters, 4 quarters, and the women is 10 by 4, the same way it is internationally, et cetera, et cetera. So not fully all the way equal as they should be. I would like to see this again with 3 minute rounds, but in terms of the fight itself, I thought it was excellent. Katie Taylor came out, and Katie Taylor, just some more background on the two women so that people know. Katie Taylor is an undisputed lightweight champion, Olympic gold medalist in 2012, who did not win again in 2016, but turned pro in 2016 after failing to win another medal. But, you know, she was still awesome. Less than a year into her pro career and about 7 fights or so, she became lightweight champion. Shortly thereafter, unified titles, and now undisputed. She's had all 4 titles at lightweight, 135 pounds for a while. She's actually a couple of years older than Amanda Serrano, who's a lot more experienced because she turned pro a lot sooner and didn't have that long of an amateur career by comparison. But going into this fight, it was great. I've been looking forward to this for, like, I don't know, 5-4 years or something like that since it was first rumored, and they have been talking about this for a while. Amanda Serrano has the record for most world championships in different weight classes for a woman. She has something like 9 world titles in 7 different weight classes, moving up between like super flyweight and junior welterweight. So that's a big weight disparity. You're talking about from the 110s to like 140 pounds, lightweight's 135. Amanda Serrano actually currently is the undisputed or unified featherweight champion at 126 pounds. So moving up 9 pounds to challenge Katie Taylor. And I thought she did great. First round, Katie Taylor came out, was counterpunching effectively. Amanda Serrano took the fight over rounds 2 through 6, in my opinion. In round 5, you could score that a 10-8 round. I did, because Amanda Serrano basically had Katie Taylor out on her feet, was rocking her from freaking pillar to post, as people would say, outlanded her 44 to 14 punches, and then ran out of gas a little bit. Katie Taylor picked back up in rounds 7, 8, and 9. And then round 10, you could argue, is the round of the year because of how they went back and forth, and it was great. So I suggest everybody watch this fight. I'm hoping they have a rematch because it is well deserved. I don't want to see it in Ireland because then Amanda Serrano is going to need a knockout to win, and I don't want her to need a knockout to win. But I scored it 96-93 for Amanda Serrano because of the 10-8 round. The scorecards were like 96-94 and 96-93 for Taylor, and then Amanda Serrano got a 96-94. And then all the Irish people on Twitter were like, how could so many Americans think Amanda Serrano won? What fight were you watching? Because they apparently think that because their woman won, that they're so sophisticated in thinking that Katie Taylor won just because she counterpunched a little bit better, even though she was getting rocked a lot, because we should actually put an emphasis on not just punches landed, but the impact of said punches that landed. But that's another story for another day. Amanda Serrano, still badass, still future Hall of Famer, 42-2. With, absolutely. I don't even remember how many knockouts, but it's 30-something, and Katie Taylor's still undefeated, 21-0, with about 6 knockouts or so. So, look, great fight all around. Fight of the year, in my opinion, so far, and it's going to be tough to not make it stay that way, even though we do have some damn good fights coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I hope they do get the fight of the year. Real quick, moving through some other stuff, keeping it to boxing. If you did not see this, Nico Ali Walsh. Ooh, I don't remember the name of the
Muhammad
dude.
Ali's grandson.
Muhammad Ali's grandson. And Brian and I have watched his first, this is 5th fight. I think I watched his.
He's been showcased on ESPN a couple of times.
His 3rd and 4th fight to watch. And I'll be honest, was not impressed. I was not impressed at all.
He got rocked a little more than you'd want a prospect.
Got rocked a little bit more. But, and we said he had some work to do, but I was impressed with this. This man, I remember the guy he knocked out. It doesn't matter. He put somebody to sleep, straight sleep mode, put him to sleep. Dude went down, looked like Pacquiao when he got hit in that sleep mode a couple years back, and it was really impressive. So if you have not seen that, go check that out. Like, it's definitely a knockout worth watching. It's not fight of the year, but it might be knockout of the year. I'll say that much. It might be knockout of the year. That's for sure.
And real quick, also want to point out Shakur Stevenson counterpunched Oscar Valdez to death like I expected.
Yep.
And Shakur Stevenson also, for people who don't know, is part Puerto Rican from his dad's side of the family.
You had to make sure
he
got that in.
On his trunks, he had an American flag on one side, had the Puerto Rican flag on the other side. And I was like, let's fucking go. Shakur Stevenson is repping. So we actually have four current world champions of boxing right now. Amanda Serrano, Shakur Stevenson, Mick Williams Arroyo, and Jonathan Gonzalez. So we need more, but Shakur Stevenson was rapping and
rapping. You don't got enough? You don't got enough?
Shakur Stevenson, no, we don't. Shakur Stevenson is, I don't want to do the hyperbole shit. Probably in terms of style and in terms of just pure dominance this early in his career, the closest thing I've seen to like young pretty boy Floyd Mayweather.
Oh. Well, I mean, he's a really good defensive fighter. I didn't know where you were going with that, but I'm like, I don't think that's crazy.
He's like 23, 24 years old. He's already so good. Like he pound for pound level. Like, but he and Oscar Valdez is a damn good fighter that he just tormented.
Yeah. You know? All right, I gotta go drop off this food for my daughter. Before we go, I want to make a note. Shout out to the WNBA because the WNBA they always get this stuff right. We talked on this podcast about what's been going on with Brittany Griner detained in Russia. The WNBA has decided they are going to honor Brittany Griner all season long, having a season tribute to her. They're going to have a floor decal, which will be used by all 12 teams. That'll have the All-Stars initials with her number 42 ahead of the start of the season, which starts this Friday. As we know, Brittany Griner, she's been detained in Russia since February after customs officials reportedly found vape cartridges containing hashish oil in her luggage. Now, there's been some updates on that, saying that Brittany Griner, they think there will be a resolution to this soon. So hopefully that happens. But salute to the WNBA. Really nice job. Great touch to honor Brittany Griner there. And I think that, you know, hopefully she's able to come home soon and rejoin her team, the Mercury, and then start playing again. Everything is okay with her because my heart definitely goes out to her friends and families through this whole process, trying to know if she's okay and what's right with her. So we hope that gets done. But WNBA, as usual, on top of it, in doing the right thing for sure.
Hope that Brittany Griner returns home safely. Still upsetting that happened, and also people should support the WNBA because their season starts this week,
Friday. So on Friday, WNBA season kicks off.
Watch the games, tweet about it. You know what I mean. The league has been progressing at a nice rate,
and growing at a nice rate.
Yeah, and it's every single year, like, definitely. I mean, and the games are great. You know what I mean? The games are great, so.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to talk about that. All right, that's it for this episode of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Please continue to support us in all the ways that you can. Follow us at AHTT Podcast, and you can listen to us. You catch us on YouTube, all digital streaming platforms. There, support us on Patreon as well. He is Brian Fonseca. I'm Devin Henry. Next couple of weeks, we should have some guests for you, some really good stuff. You know, we'll be breaking down that Kendrick album after it drops. Can't wait to do that, as well as talking about some other things in hip-hop and the world of sports. Like I said, he's Brian Fonseca. I am Dexter Henry. And until next time, y'all, peace.